Hello and welcome to the 4D Human Being podcast, where we talk about everything to do with life, leadership and love. We're here to help you gain insights and practical tools on human psychology and human behavior so that you can really get back to choice and expand your options on how you show up and how you live your life. The 4D is your fourth dimension, and that's all about your intention, your choice, taking back control so that you are happening to the world rather than the world simply happening to you. So whether it's your career, conflict, communication, or collaboration, we've got some fabulous interviews with great experts and, of course, our own 4D life hacks and chats on anything and everything that helps us be the 4D human being that we know we can be. So if you're looking to improve your impact at work, your relationships, your well-being, whether it's family relationships, friends, or how we simply make the best of our lives, this is all about getting back to choice, taking control and getting intentional, taking you from a 3D human doing to a 4D human being. Do enjoy.
How's that Graze bar?
It's really yummy. Mm. I did buy them for my daughter, so now you've broadcast to the world that I'm eating her honey Graze bars.
Do you think your daughter would have chosen a Graze bar over like a chocolate bar or a packet of Monster Munch?
Loves a Graze bar, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I think there's a time and a moment for a chocolate snack and a time and a moment for a non-chocolate snack.
Yes. Mm. Interesting.
Not very.
But anyway, you are suitably nourished and energised.
Well, it's mainly sugar, isn't it? I don't know if that's true, actually, Graze. I'll read the ingredients. Maybe it's a really healthy cereal.
I'm sure. I'm sure it's bound together with just glorious
health. But I am suitably nourished. It's a Sunday afternoon, and this is my first nourishment of the day, actually. So
that's not good.
After Super Saturday yesterday, Phil.
Yeah, so Super Saturday, we booked a number of exercise classes that it's that thing, isn't it? Someone was talking to me about this recently. If you don't want to do it right now, you won't want to do it in a week's time. And in the diary was like triple.
But I'll add to that.
Go on.
I also read, don't book those activities when you're in your 5 minutes of extrovert state. And I think that's what I did.
Oh, that is very good.
I think I was in my, I'd say, 5 seconds of physical activity state and booked a PT session and a Pilates class in the same morning on a weekend. Never again, Phil.
There's a whole thing there about what state we're in when we plan for our future self, who might not be in that state.
Likely not to be in that state. If you have a 5 second window weekly of when you're happy to do physical exercise, it's so likely
so
you won't be.
True. I used to have that with clothes, where I'd go shopping in a certain state and I'd buy the most
random. I'm working.
I bought a full length red batik wraparound skirt. Do you remember that?
I
don't know what state I was in, but I never ever got in that state again because I never ever wore that skirt. It was a unique version of self.
It was a fleeting version of self
that literally only occurred once.
Don't buy things in that state.
Or
book exercise classes.
I really believed I would become that person. Anyway, there is a super segue here. Because you just added something to my list that's really important, because we're going to talk about relationships today, particularly in terms of leadership. So it's the third pillar in what we're talking about at the moment in terms of the four things you can only do for yourself
as a leader, as an individual,
as a human being that no one else can do for you. You can get all sorts of help with all sorts of aspects of your life, from your house being cleaned to your project being realised. But you have to, for yourself, you have to do your own work on your self-awareness and your relationship with yourself.
It's true.
Secondly, you have to do your own work on a healthy ego. Boy, do we know that. Thirdly, and this is the one we're talking about today, you have to do your own work in terms of your relationships and your network. So building strong, trusted relationships and networks.
And we most likely will refer predominantly today to work relationships if we sort of make a reference or an application, but it's very, very relevant in all of our lives.
Well, we're just human beings, aren't we? I love how we separate out how we are at work or how we might be influencers or build relationships, but we're human beings. And okay, my super segue though was when you mentioned the different states and you said when you organise something in your extroverted state and your introverted state is not going to want to do it. I've added that to the list of things to talk about because it's important, isn't it? These labels of introvert, extrovert is an aspect that can both really support and sometimes hinder us based on our narrative of what
who we
believe we are, in terms of how much we can, we feel we can kind of nurture and expand relationships.
Yes, so, and of course, A, those are labels. B, they are often misused in terms of introvert, extrovert. C, we move through states. I've got D, E, and F, but I'll stop there. We are ever changeable in terms of who we are as human beings.
So, Andy, give Penelope the super segue because you got one in early there, Pen. Let's have it. There it is. So
that's a good relationship. You're so generous.
I'm such a giver.
I am really generous. Let's talk about competitiveness in relationships. Yesterday morning when I came to the exercise class, we received an email before the exercise class, and I know my sister Philippa extremely well. I looked at this email. It was a list of instructions as to how to be prepared for the Pilates class, which we hadn't ever been to before. I looked at the heading of the email, the first few words, and I thought, Philippa will not have read that email. No. She would have seen that email coming to her inbox, if we're lucky, and she would have thought that there's nothing in that email.
Well, I'm going to let you finish your generosity story in a minute, but I am just going to come in with a swoop of defence. Because...
Well, let me finish my story. So...
All right, finish your story.
So I read it and it said, please bring a pair of sticky socks, which is an unusual request for an adult exercise class.
I wouldn't have even known what that meant.
I don't think the word sticky... I can't remember what the word was. But of course, I am very aware of sticky socks, having had three...
Taken children to trampolining.
Yes, lots of that.
Yeah.
So I looked at this email and I thought, Philippa won't have read it. So I'll just take two pairs of sticky socks.
And she wouldn't own a pair of...
She wouldn't own a pair of sticky socks anyway. Didn't even cross my mind to tell Philippa there's an email to be read. I just thought, I'll just take two pairs of sticky socks because I know she won't have read it and she won't have
And
any.
I said, when you turned up with them, and you said, did you bring sticky socks? And I looked at you quizzically. Oh, it's a real good opportunity to use that word. You don't get to use that word very often. And Penelope just laughed and said, I knew you wouldn't have read the email. That's why I brought two pairs. And I said, I love you so much. And those moments of knowing someone and doing something automatically, that for me is one of the most wonderful things about good relationships.
But without the eye rolling of, I'll have to do that, then won't I? Yeah, because she won't.
Well, and as you said later, it needs to balance out and you
I get loads of great stuff from you. Not sticky socks.
Not sticky socks. But to be fair, I will just say, this is a whole other area, isn't it? But if you receive an email with capital letters reminder of your session or appointment in the headline, in the subject line, for me, that's done.
I don't need that information.
Well, no, I think that's done. You've served your purpose. You've reminded me. As it happened, I didn't need reminding, but thank you. And that's it.
Yes.
So,
but it probably needs to say important instructions. Read below.
Exactly. Whereas it said reminder, and I thought, oh, thanks very much. You've reminded me.
I don't need to open that.
Thank you very much. So, subject line's very important, as it turns out, for some people. Anyway. So,
relationship.
Well, we've just done a lovely demonstration. I feel very, very blessed to be in relationship with you from before I was even aware of it, before the birth date. But why relationships are important, and actually there is something, before we even go into the kind of workplace piece and being a leader or being a human being, and this particularly this aspect of leadership, of relationship, is why is relationship important? And there's a book by Sue Gerhardt called Why Love Matters for anybody who's interested in reading a bit further. And that really explores that fundamental human need for connection that has become much more prevalent in research, much more recent decades, whereas we've known we needed food, water and shelter. And obviously we have Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is also in there, that need for bonding and nurturing. But I think this research on what happens to our brain when we don't have human connection really has brought it into the centre ground now. We've got the science that really backs up. If you do not have connection in your life, it's very, very damaging to you. So it's absolutely fundamental. We are hardwired, and we keep saying it, But there's something to just take a moment, really absorb that when we think, oh, well, I don't need that. I don't need people. We are hardwired for it.
Totally. And even if they are fleeting moments. So I went for quite a long dog walk this morning on my own, which is very nice. I do like being with Bear. I consider that a very important relationship.
Dog relationships, whole of it. Yeah.
But there was a fun run going on in the area where I was walking it was a vineyard, actually. It was very beautiful. Mm. And this lady was on one of the water stands and she saw me. She knew I wasn't in the race. It was very clear I wasn't in the race and I had my dog. And I was following the signs as to where I was allowed to walk and not. And she said, oh, would you like a little small glass of Prosecco that we're serving? Brilliant fun run, by the way.
Great opening line to a new relationship.
And I said, I had a little chat with her and that really changed my, not that I was miserable, but it was just a really lovely thing that happened. Tiny connections also count.
Giving you another super segue there, Pen. Come on, Andy, roll her another one. She's racking them up. That's 2-0. Okay, because the next point leading on to putting in a couple of fundamentals around relationship is exactly that we are the sum of our interactions. So we particularly love to...
Even those tiny ones.
Yeah, and we particularly love to reference Carlo Rovelli in this work, that he's just done some really nice work on that.
He's a theoretical physicist who is a very inspiring teacher and author of the world of physics.
And speaker, and really from the most fundamental level of existence, we are the sum of our interactions, meaning that if we think about your moment with that lady, I think we've always thought about relationship as, well, we are a completed entity, personality, we've used that word a lot, moving towards someone, having a conversation and then moving away. And we're just us, we're moving away.
With an identity or a personality.
Yeah. Whereas what he's kind of very good at communicating and having demonstrated at a really fundamental level is we sort of need to invert that and think about we become who we are based on all of those interactions. So all of these moments, all of these relationships are shaping us. So we don't go into relationship fully formed and stay that way. We are shaped by the relationships that we choose. Yeah. And I just think that is just, firstly, one of the most wonderful new ways of thinking. But secondly, it's absolutely game changing in terms of in the 4D2C model, that second context of people.
Yes.
Who you choose to spend your time around, how you choose to interact with people is literally shaping the experience of your life.
Totally. So as an example, if I had had a grumpy person on the water stand who'd sort of shouted at me for walking the wrong way or annoying the runners, I would have had a completely different morning. So it's totally, and then my interactions with you and other people would have been different. So it's totally shaping who we are, which comes to that second layer of connection and relationships. Absolutely fundamentally important, and it shapes who we are. And then the second layer is, how choiceful are we being around the
beautiful
people? I think I'm at 3-0, Phil.
Oh, I think you just put another one in the net. It's honestly like the Euro. The Euro Cup with the women's football match. Oh my God, you're just like knocking it out of the park here. So that's a bit annoying, but you did get another one in there. Yeah. But it's
your reference to sporting events.
That was terrible. And I really enjoyed that match, but it's like it happened, I was in it, and now it's gone. And I just appreciate them so much. But yeah, the words, the titles of the things that happened. But the feeling's still there.
I get it.
The same as people. You can forget the names, but you don't forget how they made you feel.
So true.
That's a super segue. Come on, Andy.
Thinking about our choices around who we connect with. So if we think about our personal lives and our work lives, it can be that the network of people, the people we surround ourselves with, are kind of given or granted to us.
Yes.
So you're born into,
it's like going to school, isn't it?
You're born into a family, or you're given your caregivers. And any siblings, if you have them, if you go to a certain school, that whoever's in your class will define who that group of people is. When you go into a company, very often your immediate network in terms of who you need to interact with to get your job done, be that your immediate team or your clients or some peers, it will be
obvious to you or even said to you, these are the people you need to be interacting with. And we just need to be really aware, A, how those people are interacting and shaping us, and B, do we just take that as a given?
Yeah.
That's our network. Yeah. Those are the people we're going to be surrounded by that are going to shape our experience of life and work. Or do we have some choice about mm-hmm. how we can shift and map mm-hmm. that network more consciously and choicefully?
Absolutely. So we're going to talk a little bit. Well, at the end, we'll talk about a few practical things that you can do to think about both the kind of mapping and expanding, or not even expanding actually, but the choicefulness around your network as well, and also how you manage the quality of your relationship. So we'll come to that. But yeah, the first thing to sort of think about is, yeah, do you ever really think about your network? Do you map your network? Are you conscious of that being a part, certainly in terms of leadership, of being a part of what you focus on every day? So one of the big things that we really notice in terms of our work with leaders, both on a one-to-one group basis, is when we are in conversation with leaders who've come to a certain level in their career, and this is across both genders, but you might recognise it. I think it can be quite female.
There is some led. Research that has been done to suggest there is a slight more dominance on females to
meritocracy
to focus more on the competence element of yeah. their work, perhaps, rather than the networking, which it's not that we don't network and we're brilliant at it as females. It's a different type of network.
Well, exactly, because I'm very careful about the gender piece. Some people are very particularly good and just naturally good at connection. And for other people, it needs to be something more conscious. But you're absolutely right. It's also the way in which you think about relationship. So, relationship could be a very caretaking way of thinking about relationship, which yeah. is great. But there are so many other ways to think yes. about relationships. So do you have relationships in your network that, yes, you have a kind of nurturing, caretaking, but you might also want to add to that relationships that nurture and resource you.
Exactly.
So
just being aware of that balance between the task and relationship in terms of, we know from research that women are less likely to go for a job unless they have, nearly 100% of the qualifications and experience, versus a man who is more likely to go if they only have sort of between 60 and 80%. So we know that there is a tendency to focus on getting that experience, getting that yeah. knowledge, getting that competency yeah. just a little bit more, which may drive how much time you spend
yeah. on your yeah. life. And, gender aside, it's just a good thing to notice for yourself. Do you recognise in yourself the qualities of, if I roll my sleeves up a bit more and work a little bit harder, get more of these tasks done, and prove those results a bit more? Now, and of course, obviously, we know results are important in most organisations. But are you aware that you have a kind of paradigm, that you have a perspective where if you just keep working that bit harder, somebody will recognise it and that you will get rewarded? Because sometimes we hit a ceiling where there's nobody doing that, recognising in the same way anymore. And it's also a real hangover, isn't it? That's we're often brought up in that relational paradigm. If we work hard, we get the pat on the back, we get the good score, yeah. we're liked and we're rewarded. And often in organisations, you've experienced it, where that it doesn't happen like that. It starts to happen off of relationship
yeah.
rather than necessarily
yeah.
Competence. And that can be very frustrating and difficult
yeah.
if your whole mechanism of survival and success is still in that, if I just keep working, yes. I'll get recognised.
And just going back to your previous point about the nature of the relationship, is it a caretaking? Is it a sort of parenting? Is it more of a I need nurturing, or I want to learn something? What's the nature of the relationship? Again, just something to notice. Are you particularly good at focusing on the relationships, the emotional interactions with your team versus those relationships and emotional interactions with your peers or your seniors? Again, that will give you an idea yeah. of where your relational focus will tend to be. And there's no right or wrong, good or bad. It's just useful to be aware of it And ideally, as Philippa said, as we move up the ladder of leadership, we really want to make sure we've expanded our relationships in all directions to serve us and the organisation in which we work.
Yeah, and notice where we're more comfortable as well, isn't it? Because often we'll see that peer-to-peer or certainly up to senior relationships as just not as comfortable. It's not as safe. It's slightly edgier.
Or perhaps we think the reliance should be on them to build the relationship rather than us. There's lots of patterns out there.
Yeah.
And we're interested always in being aware of those patterns and breaking patterns that are not very helpful, which is why we're really interested in leaders taking responsibility and ownership of their network and their relationships to the benefit of themselves, their teams and their organisations.
Yes. And there's something, isn't there, here? I just want to talk to the woo-woo, the wah-wah here. What does she mean by that? Because I was just sitting here thinking, I know, because I, you know, that...
You are so tapped into it.
Tapped into the woo. Well, no, what I mean by that more, actually, in this instance, is that it feels solid and tangible to get that work done, whereas to spend your time in a leadership position having conversations and building relationships, do you think, I'm not doing anything. Yeah. Like, what am I doing? And I think that is such a, it can be such a challenging shift. In spiral dynamics, we'd be thinking about that from blue, where, you know, I know what I've got to do, I've got my processes and my tasks, into orange, where I'm strategic about my relationships, into green, where it's all about relationship, and then, of course, into that second tier, yellow, which is systems thinking, which is where you are absolutely coming from a place of both the task and the relationships all working together, and you've got that overview perspective, and you know from that perspective how important all of it is to innovate, to develop, to get the job done, sort of thing. So we might mention the systems piece later on, but the big piece here is task versus relationship, task versus relationship. Notice for yourself, both at home, in your, I mean, isn't it, I mean, seriously, are you irritated because those pictures have not been hung or the bins haven't been taken out? Do you spend all weekend in task, or have you got some focus on the relationship? And it might be that they can work at the same time, but that there is an awareness and a focus, even if you're painting a wall together, that you are in the relationship at the same time. And that's it sounds like such a small thing, but it's such a different way of living.
You are creating the experience as well as getting the wall painted.
As well as getting the wall painted. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you are the sum of your interactions. And you will look at that wall very differently if your experience of it together.
It's the plate of joy, Phil.
It's the plate of joy. Oh, it's the plate of joy. Don't. Can we even talk about that? We went to a ceramic. I'm going to do a headline on it. We went to a ceramic place and we've sort of made a joke about it because one of Penelope's girls was not in the best of moods. I'm just going to say that. And we did some ceramics. We picked it up. And so we've renamed this plate, which could have been absolutely sort of imbibed with this negative energy.
Yes.
We've called it now the plate of joy.
Yes. And I'm going to be joyful whenever I bring that plate.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, because it could have really represented a really difficult moment.
Well, actually, that is a good example of focusing on the relationship, which I am particularly good at with my youngest daughter, well, with all my children, I hope, but because I really just, I do need to be with her, where, you know, you could say it's quite expensive to go to a ceramics painting thing. We had a limited amount of time, you know, and she was painting the thing. And well, I didn't focus at all on what is now the plate of joy.
Yeah.
The thing was to make sure that she was okay.
Right. She just make it as okay as possible. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So task versus relationship. So really interesting as a leader, you need your team and the people around you to get things done. And can you balance that seesaw with what am I giving them in terms of relationship and what are they bringing to me in terms of relationship? Because from that, a lot of that work will come and it will also, of course, feel very different. So just notice that. Is your seesaw or your scales tipped too far to task?
So the first thing I would do before you go on to your fabulous tips that were in your article, the first thing I would do, which you very often do with teams and even individuals in leadership development, is map our network. So we won't spend a lot of time on this on the podcast. Take a piece of paper, write down your name in the centre, make sure you're at the centre of your network.
Mm.
And something that we do, which can be quite useful, is we put three concentric circles around ourselves and we call it obvious,
outside and others. So people who are really, really close that you don't even have to think about, you interact with them all the time. Then those people that you interact with less frequently. And then those people who are really on the periphery are not even quite in your network yet. And you can add a couple of boxes, your fans, the people who think you're amazing, and the connectors, the people that, you know, can connect you with other people in your network. Just a really useful framework written down black and white to actually map out your network and make some choices about, well, who do I want to pull into my network?
Into the centre, who actually needs to maybe go further out. And this is starting to talk to the quality. Once you've mapped the sort of quantity and the shape of your network, and you also, of course, here want to think about diversity in many ways, the diversity of the kind of people that you've got in your network, because that is also obviously going to really enrich your own experience of yourself and your life and your experiences. The second thing then to think about is the quality of those relationships. And you can think of this in a couple of ways. You can think about this in terms of the energetics of the relationship. So quite literally, what energetically feels good, what kind of draws you towards them, because when you're with them, that energy, that dynamic is good. And what doesn't feel so good? And have you got people in those sort of first, particularly the inner circle, but other circles, where actually you're spending a lot of time with energy that doesn't feel good? And then you might just want to just start to lessen some of that connection. And the other way to think about the quality of your relationships, of course, is you could think about Cialdini, his influencing model.
Yes, so Robert Cialdini, an absolute guru around persuasion and influencing, which when we think about relationships, particularly at work as leaders, influencing and persuading within our relationships are incredibly important. And the six principles that Cialdini found in terms of how people are really influenced and persuaded are reciprocity, consensus or social proof, liking, authority, scarcity, and commitment or consensus. If you're interested in finding out more about Cialdini's six principles of persuasion, check out his book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. In terms of this topic around relationships and networks, we're really going to focus on the two that for us are the most important when we think about the quality of our relationships. And those are liking and reciprocity. So let's start with liking.
Liking is liking. You either like people or you don't. But that's a very strong connector, if you like. We'll do a lot for people who we like, and people who like us will do a lot for us.
And this is why in our communication workshops, we do focus a lot on how you're making other people feel. And we have wonderful tools for this. So yes, you may like people, you may not like people. And there is work to be done in terms of how you communicate that will change people's emotional state.
So you
can influence how people feel about you.
Absolutely. And one of the tips that we'll give is to also help towards sort of building relationship, because it's all very well saying, well, liking is one of the top, but you know, well, what do I do with this relationship? Because me and that other person don't get on very well. And there are ways, of course, to build those relationships very practically.
And that, of course, leads to reciprocity, the second of Cialdini's principles that we're really interested in exploring when we're looking at this particular topic around relationships and networking. So reciprocity is all about, well, exactly that give and take and being reliable and the giving and receiving. And there's lots of ways that we can do this. One of the key things is for us to step in and start that reciprocal relationship.
Absolutely. So the research on this is really, really clear. Quite simply, if you've done something for somebody, and then they did some research in there where they gave people like a can of drink in a station, and then, you know, 10 minutes later they asked them to do something.
Yeah.
And if it's the same person that's given them the drink, it's very hard for us to then not do something. So it has got a very kind of, I guess it's almost a tactical piece around it. But really, we would talk about building your reciprocity bank. So it's giving something of value to other people. You may or may not need to withdraw a favour, but actually what you're giving is something that's quite simple for you to give. You can give high value to somebody that builds up the reciprocity bank, and that is really going to strengthen your relationships.
And it might not cost you anything. It might cost you a little bit of time, but it might not even cost that. It might be a 15-second email to somebody. It might be a piece of information. It might be some advice. It might be that you tell somebody else how amazing they are. It doesn't have to cost you a lot of money.
And it might actually be enjoyable, because if somebody wants 15 minutes of my time for creative brainstorm, happy days, and I'll give them everything I've got in that time, and that hopefully would be high value to them and enjoyable for me. So exactly, it's remembering your strengths as well. So think about the reciprocity bank and how you can fill that on a day-to-day basis, and how you can be much more conscious of that. So that, again, we're going back to thinking about leadership as relationship, that part of your day-to-day job as a leader is to strengthen and build and expand your relationship. So think about exactly that, whether you can give some information to somebody, some of your time. How can you fill the bank of somebody that might be in your network or you want in your network? What can you give them of high value that will be quite easy for you to give, and that will help to put something into your relationship that's really, really tangible?
Yeah. The other way to start a reciprocal relationship is to ask somebody for help. So you're getting something from somebody else. Now, this may sound really strange, but there's two pieces around this. One is, often if we want to get in touch with, perhaps a senior leader or somebody we don't know very well who we'd love to have in our network, we can put ourselves under an enormous amount of pressure that we either have to work on a project together, or we have to give them some information, or we have to deliver something of value to them. But actually, people really like to be asked for help. So it's an easy way to take the pressure off of you. And the other piece is, as Philip said, once you ask somebody for help, people like being asked for help very often. It makes them feel very good. And the second thing is that you're very likely to be top of mind to them, and they're much more likely to offer help again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a weird one, isn't it? That it's so interesting. Maybe we are culturally, and this will depend on where you're from and your own background, but asking for help, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think we are slightly brought up, or a lot of people slightly brought up in a paradigm of you should already know.
Yeah.
And putting your hand up too many times in class, putting your hand up to give information or to know something, big, big brownie points.
Yes, it's true.
But putting your hand up to keep asking for help, I don't know if that's hugely rewarded, is it?
I think you might be right. Although, as an adult, well, maybe even as a child, I really do like receiving those emails where people are asking, because it makes me feel like, I must have something of value.
And Penelope, let me tell you, there's a treasure trove of value over there. It's true, though. You are so right, though.
Exactly.
It makes the other person feel valued.
Yeah.
Yeah. So asking for help. The final one, though, is it's the really easy one that maybe we don't do as much. Some people are really good at this, but some people, I've talked to leaders recently, I've said, so this is appreciation, this last one. So very simply appreciating, but very specifically appreciating the source of the good thing that happened. So the person, really appreciating what they did and appreciating the impact of what they did on you or other people or the organization. So it's got those three stages to it. Who is it? What did they do? And what was the impact? So that it's specific. It's not just all, thanks for everything. We hear that a lot, don't we? But I have talked to a number of leaders quite recently where I've mentioned this, and I've said, have you got a culture of appreciation? Is it something that you sort of do on a weekly basis? And more often than I expected, I heard, no, I wouldn't, that would be weird for me to, or that's not me, I hear. And so I would think, if you feel like, oh, that's not really me, whenever you hear those words, it's not me, stop and ask, could it be you? Is that a choice you could make? It's the simplest thing you can do. Penelope loves nothing more than a mocked up certificate, do you, Pam?
Oh, I love it. I feel very appreciative.
Literally from me, your twin sister.
I love your little card certificates that you send me on WhatsApp. When I've finished a program with clients, I say, it went really well, and I get a little sticker with
scribbled writing on an iPhone. But it's a really, really interesting one. It's so hardwired in us from very, very young. We've loved to get that pat on the back, and we still do.
And if you think about your network of people, you may have people much more junior than you at the moment.
every time you appreciate somebody, it's almost like you're building brick by brick that foundation of your future self, your future network, you know, whatever that may bring. And you don't know what the future brings. It's unnerving for people and for leaders when they don't quite have those bricks in place and the world or the organization starts shifting around them. People leave, there's restructuring, and perhaps they haven't quite got as many people in that strong network as they would have liked. And it can feel very unnerving.
That's absolutely right. That's a really, really good point. What happens when our network feels like it's really, really shattering? And that's the time to really strengthen the bonds that you
and
have.
And even before, make sure it's wider perhaps than you think it needs to be.
Yeah. So send out those appreciations. And also, if you're not already good at it, get good at accepting appreciation, because it is such a good relationship and network builder. So we appreciate that you've been listening to this podcast, Penelope. I appreciate you and all that you bring, and the fact that you've won 3-0 on the Super Segways.
And sticky socks. I mean, I've had the week.
Sticky socks, seriously. Sticky socks. I appreciate you bringing me sticky socks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the 4D Human Being Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please do tell your friends and colleagues. For more information on our programs, our on-demand courses, and to sign up to our monthly newsletter, do check us out at 4dhumanbeing.com. Until the next time.